The source material that I'll be deriving my talk from will come from these three papers, the first one of which is by myself and a student at Berkeley named Alon Halpern. The second paper is by, I believe, Brian Swingle and his collaborators. And then the third paper is by Takayanagi and a student, Umemoto. Right, so if we're going to talk about conditional entanglement of purification, then first it's good to have a definition of entanglement. So entanglement, what this is it is the quantum or classical correlation between two subsystems. Good. So, moreover, for a pure state, entanglement, the entanglement entropy quantifies the amount of entanglement between a subsystem of the pure state and the rest of the pure state. What this means is, if I have some density matrix rho A, such that rho A is defined by tracing out the B system of some pure state psi defined on the AB system, then this entanglement entropy is S of rho A. Sometimes I'll just call this S of A for simplification. And this is equal to negative trace of rho A log rho A. So note that the entanglement entropy, this object, quantifies the amount of entanglement between between A and its purification. If one wants to know about the amount of entanglement between A and another portion of, say, a mixed state, for example, if we defined instead rho A such that rho A is equal to the trace over the B system of some generically mixed state rho AB, then the amount of then the relevant quantity that quantifies the amount of entanglement between A and B will actually be the mutual information between A and B, which is equal to S of A plus S of B minus S of AB. So that will quantify the amount of entanglement entropy. Because the entanglement entropy is useful for quantifying the amount of correlation between a system and its purification, and defines the ability to quantify the amount of entanglement between one portion of a mixed state and the other portion of a mixed state, it's good to quantify what constraints this quantity needs to obey. So for all quantum states, the following set of things are known. So first of all, the entanglement entropy is always non-negative. The mutual information as defined there is also non-negative, and an object called the conditional mutual information is also non-negative. So at the level of entanglement entropy, these are the only three unconditionally true inequalities that are currently known to hold for all quantum states. Now, there are other inequalities that you can get by permuting the labels of these regions. For example, if I exchange B and AB in these two systems, then I land on something that's not what this inequality is usually called, not subadditivity. You land on something called the Araki-Leib inequality. But those inequalities I'm not defining as different because they're permutationally equivalent to the inequalities that I've thus far written down. Okay, good. Another feature about the entanglement entropy that I should say is that entanglement entropy is known to be invariant under something called LOCC. LOCC stands for local operations in classical communication. What this means is that the entanglement entropy of rho A does not change if I act with only a unitary operation on the A portion of the Hilbert space, or only a unitary operation on the A complement portion of the Hilbert space, or if I'm only allowed to exchange classical bits between the A and A complement portions of the Hilbert space. This does not change the entanglement entropy. The reason why this is relevant is because this is a quantity, this is a feature that helps to define the entanglement as something that is the entanglement entropy as something that is a good measure of the amount of entanglement. It helps to quantify it as something called an entanglement monotone. Good. So at this point, let me take a step back and let me talk about purification in general. Right, so now let's talk about purification in the context of mixed states. So if I have a state of rho AB that's some generic mixed state, then it is known that I can always consider a purification of this state onto some state psi ABC as long as the dimensionality of the Hilbert space of the C system is greater than or equal to the exponential of the entanglement entropy of the AB system. So the simple way to think about this is you can think about rho AB up to LOCC transformation. You can do a local operation on rho AB that converts it essentially into a bunch of halves of Bell pairs and some amount of unentangled ancilla qubits on top of that. Then you can think of the C system that purifies it as just the other half of each of those Bell pairs that the rho AB system has. And so because the number of Bell pairs across this bipartition is equal to the entanglement entropy, you can always create a C system that purifies the AB system whose dimensionality is E to the entanglement entropy. So just, yeah.
Bell pairs, shouldn't that be log base 2 and then 2 to the power of s? Yes,
it should be.
Yes.
Sorry, what was the other thing? Did I miss?
Log base 2, that's whatever.
Oh, sure, yeah. That's the base of the log was obscured there. Thanks. Right, so here, again, what this means is that in the context of this, I can think of the entanglement entropy of A, S of A. This quantifies the amount of entanglement between the A and the BC system. So while it didn't quantify the amount of entanglement between the A and the B system, it does quantify the amount of entanglement between the A and the full BC system. Now, one thing to notice is that this quantity is independent of your choice of purification. Right? So the definition of entanglement entropy tells you that S of A tells you about the amount of correlation between A and the complement system. But what this tells you is that you have many different potential choices that you can make for your purification of the of row AB. So in particular, for example, I can consider a purification where C is given by halves of Bell pairs, another purification where C is given by halves of Bell pairs, plus any number of unentangled ancilla. And moreover, I can make that statement less trivial by now acting a local unitary only on the C portion of the subsystem, so that now it looks like an extremely non-trivial quantum state that just has sub-maximal entanglement. And so your choice of entanglement, your choice of purification is something that you're free to do, but it does not affect S of A. However, okay, the lesson that we should extract from this is that one has many possible choices of purification of some mixed state that one can choose. So what is the best choice of purification of a mixed state? So another way of saying this question is, what is the minimal purification of row AB? And the attempt to answer this question is what will define the object called the entanglement of purification. Right? So the definition of entanglement of purification This was a concept first introduced by Ter Hall et al. In 2002. And it can be defined as follows. The entanglement of purification EP between two systems AB is equal to the infimum over A prime and B prime of S of A prime when the overall state, sorry, let me write this a different way, when row AB is equal to a trace over the A prime and B prime systems of some pure state defined on A prime, B, B prime. So you can see that because we're given a, so the fact that we have many possible different choices of the purification is manifested in the fact that this pure state will be different depending on your choices of A prime and B prime. And here we're in some sense taking the minimal one. We're taking the one that minimizes the amount of entanglement entropy between the AA prime system and the BB prime system. There's another thing that I should say, that this state psi is defined on the Hilbert space HAA prime tensor HBB prime. So even if there's some weird factorization properties between A and A prime, this factorization we demand. Yeah?
So if your, I understand that your A prime is basically unique up to isometry, so in A prime, is that right?
Which
so
prime?
A prime purifies AB.
A prime and B prime together purify AB.
Oh, sorry. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, so we should see that there are some things that are immediately true about this definition. So some observations. First of all, for a pure state, for a pure row AB, then we have that the entanglement of purification of A and B is equal to S of A, or S of B, because they're the same thing. The way that you can see this is because for a pure state, you can show that the optimal purification is to take either A prime or B prime to be empty, and then to push the entire remainder of the purification into the other one. But if we do that, then the entanglement of purification will just give you S of B. Or S of A, depending on which system you pushed it into. Another case is for product state, row AB when you have a product state, the entanglement of purification between A and B is equal to zero. So the reason here is because I can purify A prime here to make a row AA prime separately a pure state and row BB prime separately a pure state, and so the entanglement entropies are zero. And then final observation is that for row AB, that's classically correlated. So if this is equal to something that looks like a sum over PI, I A, tensor I B, then you can show that the entanglement of purification between A and B is equal to minus PI log PI. So this is equal to the Shannon entropy. So these properties are, these observations are true for specific cases of row AB. But there are also some other properties that are true of row AB that can be stated in terms of inequality constraints. First, I'll number these for convenience. First, zero is between the entanglement of purification of A and B. And this is upper bounded by the minimum of S of A and S of B. Secondly, the entanglement of purification of A and B of A in the BC system is greater than or equal to the entanglement of purification of the A and B system. Third, the entanglement of purification of this is upper bounded by the mutual information. And then I'll just write the last few. And then finally, for pure states row ABC, the entanglement of purification of A with BC is greater than or equal to the entanglement of purification A with B plus the entanglement of purification of A with C. So it's polygamous. I can give you a quick sketch of how these things are proven for generic quantum systems. It'll be kind of useful later. So for the first thing, it's clear that it's greater than or equal to zero because it's some entanglement entropy. So that I don't need to say anything more about. You can show that there's a standard purification. Which yields that S of AA prime is equal to S of A or S of B. There's no extremization over this, so in general, you just take the smaller of these, and it's clear that that upper bounds the entanglement of purification. For the second one, you can see that for pure row ABC, you can see that the entanglement of purification between A and BC is equal to S of A. But you also know that this is greater than or equal to the entanglement of purification between A and B by the second part of the first property. And so this suffices to prove it for a pure state. For a mixed state, what you end up seeing is that this is true because you have a constrained optimization on the left-hand side and a less constrained optimization on the right-hand side. What this means is that here, because we fixed the BC system, that's more constraining than just fixing the B system. So if you're trying to apply an optimization, then it immediately follows that the less constrained optimization is going to be smaller than the more constrained optimization, because it's harder to achieve that optimal result. Third one, you can show that S of A prime bar B prime is less than or equal to S of A prime bar A plus S of B prime bar B. This just follows from adding two subadditivities. And so here, if you expand this, this becomes S of A prime B B prime minus S of, sorry. B is less than or equal to S of AA prime minus S of A plus S of BB prime minus S of B. But these separately are just the entanglement of purifications. And this is 0 because the overall state is a pure state. And then the other things recombine to give you the mutual information. And so you can find that the entanglement of purification upper bounds that. I'm going to skip the proofs of the last two because I'm not sure how really enlightening they are. But they kind of work in the same way. So the only thing that I want to say here about these results is that these are all known inequalities that the entanglement of purification obeys. So that means that short of being able to prove that something is equal to the entanglement of purification, in some sense, the best that you can do to show that something might be equal to the entanglement of purification by some sort of conjecture is to show that it obeys these same set of inequalities. Okay, so while I'm erasing the board, are there any questions? I apologize if this is very slow for people in particular that have more of a quantum information background, but I promise you that it's relevant for what I'm about to say.
Yeah. Just to clarify the last statement, it means that every inequality for entanglement purification can be shown to be equivalent to the previous ones, or
all known entanglement of purification.
Or are you saying that all what we know at the moment is those?
I think all that we know at the moment are these. Like there could be more, but they haven't been found. I think that's right. Okay, so now let me review some relevant ingredients of holography for a bit. So the first thing that I need to say is the Ryu-Takayanagi formula, which is a holographic way of calculating the entanglement entropy, where the entanglement entropy of some region A is equal to the area subtending that region A over 4G. So the standard picture is I have some region in the boundary A, and then I find some minimal surface that subtends it in the bulk. The area of that minimal surface calculates the entanglement entropy of A. And so the reason why this is useful is what it does is it converts kind of hard linear algebraic problems into geometric questions. For example, if I wanted to prove something about the entanglement entropy of a region for a generic quantum system, I need to diagonalize the density matrix and make some and do some stuff where I take the eigenvalues of the density matrix and I multiply them by their logs and I sum them up. This is a process that's very time intensive and difficult for generic quantum systems. Here, when you have a holographic setup, what you do is you convert those questions into questions on, are these minimal surfaces larger or smaller than other ones? And so if you're interested in proving, for example, those entanglement entropy inequalities that I just erased, here you can do them kind of much more efficiently. Like for example, this is the sketch of the proof of strong subadditivity. I have three systems like this. S of AB is calculated by this minimal surface. S of BC is calculated by this minimal surface. S of B is this middle one. And S of ABC is this large one. Well, now it's immediate that strong subadditivity for this specific combination of regions is correct because this minimal surface is minimal, but I can non-minimally subtend it with the union of these two minimal surfaces, these two portions of minimal surfaces for AB and BC. And similarly, I can non-minimally subtend the B region with these other portions. And so this shows that S of AB, this shows strong subadditivity. So you can see how the proof method is very clean. You have to do some case analyses when you do these kinds of geometric things, but those are typically under control. So the other thing that's true is that when you prove things about entanglement entropy using the holographic method, the proofs are only true for holographic states. So what this means is that you can prove some set of inequalities that are true in this geometric method, but these proofs will not prove that these statements are true for all quantum states. They'll generically prove that they're true for some set of holographic states in which the bulk is well described by some sort of semi-classical bulk geometry. And so some examples of these inequalities are the monogamy of mutual information by Hedrick, Hayden, and Maloney. And some other cyclic combination, for example, S of C plus S of BCD plus S of EAB is greater than or equal to S of AB plus S of BC plus all the way to S of EA plus S of ABCDE. And this generalizes to an infinite family of inequalities that are true for all holographic states, but are not necessarily true for all quantum states. In fact, they're not true for quantum states. GHD states are, in general, a counterexample to these sorts of things, but they are not believed to have a holographic description. These dots just mean that we're taking the cyclic combinations of three things. And so, for example, you arrange ABCDE around a loop, and you take consecutive sets of three. And so, for example, it doesn't include something like ABD. And then these are the cyclic two combinations. Okay. So one can turn the fact that these inequalities are not true in general for all quantum states into a feature instead of a bug, because what this means is that you can use these inequalities to distinguish which states can or cannot be holographic. If you had inequalities that were true for all quantum states, then if you checked whether the inequality was saturated for any quantum state, you would trivially get that it was always saturated and it gives you no distinguishing power. But if you have some set of inequalities that's true only for holographic states, and if you have a state that doesn't obey that inequality, that precludes it from being holographic, then if someone gives you some sort of, for example, conformal field theory and asks you whether entanglement entropies of subregions do or do not obey these inequalities, then you can just check whether or not that's true. And if it's true, it doesn't prove that it's a holographic state, but at least it passes a non-trivial check. If it's not true, then it cannot be holographic. So you can use this as a discriminator for whether or not something is holographic. Moreover, for the experts, there is another set of constraints on what things can or cannot be holographic by Heemskerk, Polchinski, Panadones, and Sully. But these constraints are constraints on theories, whereas the entropy constraints above these constrained states. What I mean by this is that you can consider n equals 4 super Yang Mills, which is known to be dual to ADS5 cross S5, but wait, that's not quite true. It's known to be dual to ADS5 cross S5 for the ground state of n equals 4 super Yang Mills. You can put any state you want into n equals 4 super Yang Mills, and if you put in something with some really weird entanglement structure, it will in general not be dual to a classical bulk geometry. And so someone can give you a theory, but if they don't tell you what specific state they're investigating in the theory, then you have an incomplete set of constraints. And so if you want to consider whether or not the specific state they give you can or cannot be holographic, then you have to consider constraints of that form instead of constraints of these form that tell you things about the sparseness of the spectrum and the size of the central charge. Good. Are there any questions at this point? OK, so there's been another recent conjecture by Takayanagi and his student, and also around the same time by Swingle, Zalatel, and their collaborators. That says that there exists a holographic description of the entanglement of purification object that I was laboring on about earlier. In particular, that this object is this thing called EW, which is the entanglement wedge cross section. What does this mean? Well, just if I have some portions on the boundary CFT, say for example A and B, then I can construct the entanglement wedge of A and B. Here I'm going to take the non-trivial phase of the entanglement wedge, where it's this phase, where the entanglement wedge is defined as the region that is bounded by the A and B regions and the Ryu Takayanagi surfaces subtending the A and B regions. So in this case, it could have been two separate things like this, but I'm drawing the single connected phase like this because it's less trivial. Here, the EW object, the entanglement wedge cross section, is defined as the minimal, as the area of the minimal surface that partitions the entanglement wedge into a region that is adjacent to A and a region that is adjacent to B. Right? So here, EW is suggestively also defined as an infimum over possible partitions. That separate A from B in the entanglement wedge. So you can see now maybe why I didn't want to draw the case when the entanglement wedge was two factorized regions, one that was just given by this and one that was just given by this, because then the minimal partition that separates them is just zero. You don't need to add a partition if they're separated to begin with. So why would you make such a conjecture? Well, you would make such a conjecture because you can show that you can actually show that EW obeys all the same observations and inequalities that EP is known to obey. So in particular, you can show that they obey those inequalities. For their sake, I'm going to leave those up for a second, and I'm going to talk about briefly how one can see that they're true in the context of EW. This will hopefully go much faster, and will also double to serve as a demonstration by principle that doing things holographically generally allow you to make these considerations much more quickly. So let me consider the case where A and B together make a pure state. What this means is that if I have a single CFT boundary, I'm partitioning it completely into one region A and then another region B, because A and B are CFT subregions. Well, then the minimal surface that separates A from B is just this boundary anchored minimal surface that separates A from B. But the boundary anchored minimal surface that separates A from B is exactly the RT surface of A or the RT surface of B. And so here you can see that for a pure state, the entanglement wedge, this EW object is equal to S of A or S of B, right? Which is the first observation there, right? So for a product state, if I have, say, A here and B here, then you can show that here the holographic mutual information is zero, so they're approximately a product state. If you want them to really be a product state, you can put them in two unentangled CFT boundaries, where one is a subregion of one and the other is a subregion of the other. Well, in that case, then I can take, if this is a product state, then the same kind of argument follows as before. In particular, let me take the case where they're really a product state, where A is here and B is here. Then I can take A prime, I can choose A prime to be the remainder of that CFT and B prime to be the remainder of this CFT. And so then the entanglement entropy of SA prime is clearly equal to zero. And for the final observation, for rho AB of that form, well, that form should look very reminiscent to people that study ADS CFT, because for a particular choice of PI, that form defines the thermofield double state. So in particular, the thermofield double state for people that are more quantum information in the room is something that defines a wormhole geometry between two boundary CFTs, CFT1 and CFT2. And here, if we have some state like this, what this is really saying is that we're calling this A and this B. Now, if we want to calculate the entanglement of purification, if we want to calculate the entanglement wedge here, the minimal surface that separates A from B is going to be given by the waste of this wormhole. But it's known for the thermofield's double state that the waste of that wormhole calculates the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the eternal ADS black hole. And the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the eternal ADS black hole is nothing more than the Shannon entropy of the eternal ADS black hole. And because of that, you recover, in this specific example, the fact that for this kind of factorization, the entanglement, this EW object is equal to the Shannon entropy. Now to go through the other things kind of quickly. Well, if I have, I guess I can argue starting from this picture. So a choice that partitions A from B will of course be the entanglement entropy surface, RT surface of A or B separately. So we're always free to make that choice. It's just not clear that that's the smallest possible choice. And so the fact that that is enough to prove that the entanglement, that EW is upper bounded by the minimum of S of A or S of B. Also, you can't choose a negative area for your partitioning, so it's clearly positive. The second property follows from something called entanglement wedge nesting. You can show kind of in the same way, but holographically, that the second thing is a constrained optimization, but over geometric lengths, instead of over these entanglement of purification things. So it follows kind of immediately there. So the third object follows geometrically, but I'll come back to like why that's true later. The fourth object kind of follows from monogamy of mutual information, because we have that the entanglement of purification of A and BC is upper bounds 1/2 the mutual information between A and BC. This is just another specific example of case three. But holographically, we know that this always upper bounds 1/2 the mutual information between A and B plus 1/2 the mutual information between A and C. that this is greater than or equal to zero, but whatever. This inequality follows because of monogamy of mutual information. You can show that that first inequality that I wrote up there, if you recombine the terms, you'll end up seeing that it turns into this inequality. And so this this property of the entanglement waste just follows immediately from that. And then finally, for the last one, I'm not going to go through it, but it also follows in exactly the same way as for the entanglement of purification case by just combining properties 1 through 4. Yeah.
The main inequalities hold for time dependent states.
For what?
Time dependent states.
Yeah, you can show that these things also generalize to HRT. Okay, good. So now we can ask, are there any other non-trivial things that we can say about this EW or generalizations of this EW object that we previously couldn't say? All right, so one can ask if there are any other EW inequalities. So for EW inequalities, let's take a closer look at the third inequality whose proof I skipped over a second ago. So that's this one. Let's draw in what these objects that they correspond to are geometrically. So again, the sum region A, sum region B, draw the connected phase, and then draw this EW object. Right? So here what we want. What is this trying to say? This is trying to be some sort of geometric upper bound for this combination of entropies. So this combination of entropies are these two calculate S of AB, and then this one and this one calculate S of A and S of B. Right? So we know that there is a proof holographically that tells you that S of A plus S of B is greater than or equal to this thing. The fact that we have something that's greater than or equal to this through some rearrangement of terms. Yeah, so if we rearrange the terms a little bit, it'll make it clear. What we're asking is what object, what geometric object can we insert into the bulk that we add to S of AB that will now make this side geometrically greater than that side. Yeah.
You still need the 1/2, right?
Yeah, that's right. So these are all over 2. Thank you. So this is this EW object, right? And one can see that you can do this by now saying, okay, so we have S of A here. We can now non-minimally subtend S of A if we're allowed to use this region by considering the union of surfaces that go here, down along EW, and then back across here. So that non-minimally subtends S of A. And then by symmetrically, this union of regions non-minimally subtends S of B. And so you can see that we used EW twice, which is why there's this factor of 1/2 in front of the other information, in front of the entanglement entropy pieces. And so you can see that this inequality is true holographically. For this reason. But once you start thinking about it in this way, you can see that this EW provides a upper bound for the mutual information in this way. That motivates the question of, is there an object that provides an upper bound to things like this? Is there an object that provides an upper bound to the conditional mutual information, which is known to be lower bounded for zero for all quantum, and in particular holographic states? And the answer to this question is also yes. So here, what you can do is you can construct some other region like this.
Sorry, can you remind us the definition of the conditional?
Of course. So this is S of AC plus S of BC minus S of C minus S of ABC. Right? So this is the definition of conditional mutual information. Now we can consider regions like this. A, B, and C. And then we can draw in the minimal surfaces that correspond to these things. So S of AC corresponds to this surface and this surface. S of BC corresponds to this surface, that surface. S of C corresponds to this surface. And S of ABC corresponds to these small regions. So because these two particular combination of regions appear once with each sign, we can cancel them here. And so we're left with these two regions, right? And normally these two regions are combined to be combined to give you positivity of conditional mutual information. But you can ask, what is the thing that I need to add in order to make the thing negative, in order to flip the sign? And what you can show is that that region is two copies of that surface. That connects this portion to the entanglement entropy surface of C. You can kind of see this because now I can go from here down and across, that non-minimally subtends this, and I can go up, across, and then up again, that non-minimally subtends the other piece. And so you can see, and this generalizes to higher dimensions and other configurations too, so it's still correct. And so you can see that now this defines some EW-like object that upper bounds 1/2 of the conditional mutual information. And we're going to suggestively call it the conditional entanglement waste cross-section. So having shown how it works in a toy example, now I can define what it is. In general, so the entanglement, the conditional entanglement wedge cross section of ABC is the minimal partitioning of the following object of the entanglement wedge of, that's confusing, of the entanglement wedge of ABC if I mod out from it the entanglement wedge of C. You can see why that was necessary in the picture above, because the entanglement wedge of ABC, if I just tried to partition it, would in particular include the entanglement wedge of C. And we have that those surfaces need to end on the entanglement wedge surface of C. So in order to fit that, we mod out by this entanglement wedge region of C. And in particular, it's the minimal partitioning of this into regions adjacent to A or B. So it really is the conditional generalization of the entanglement wedge cross-section definition from before. And in particular, it provides this non-trivial upper bound. Now, there are other things that you can do where you can show that this entanglement, that simple linear functions of the entanglement wedge cross-section also upper bound the tripartite information. So this holographically. This part of the inequality is the monogamy of mutual information inequality that I talked about before. And also there's another simple function of this that upper bounds the cyclic combination. So these are, for example, the five-party inequality that I talked about before and other generalizations of it. You can show that all of the holographic entanglement entropy combinations that were proven to be non-negative for holographic states, you can upper bound with these entanglement waste objects, non-trivially. Now, normally, if they were just upper bounded by a single entanglement entropy, those are trivial upper bounds, but these are non-trivial upper bounds because they're some geometric thing that you can compute that is not just the entanglement entropy of one of the regions. Yeah. So normally, at this point, is where the talk would end if this were a talk about holographic entanglement entropy inequalities, because of the previous statement that I said about how for holographic entanglement entropy inequalities, they're not true for all quantum states, but they're only true for some holographic subset of all quantum states, and therefore you can use them as some sort of discriminator. The interesting thing about these objects is that they actually motivate a definition through the EWEP conjecture of EP that you can prove also non-trivially upper bounds the conditional mutual information of these information theoretic combinations for all quantum states. So in particular, let me consider a definition of a conditional entanglement of purification. So I'm going to define the conditional entanglement of purification. Yeah, so let me define the conditional entanglement of purification as the infimum over possible choices A prime, B prime, and something called CA of the entanglement of A prime CA, where I have some pure state that's defined on A prime B, B prime CA CB. And this is a purification of some state rho ABC with a Hilbert space decomposition of H A prime CA tensor product H B B prime CB. So the difference between this definition and the original definition of entanglement of purification is that now we fix some C system that we're no longer allowed to move, and we're performing a constrained optimization of a constrained optimization over this quantity to define this conditional entanglement of purification. Yeah?
The CA and CB are C, basically?
That's right. The union. Yeah, that's right. Good. So why is this an interesting quantity? Well, this is an interesting quantity because we can show things about it. So let's consider the following combination. So this is going to be equal to the entanglement entropy of SAA prime CA plus SBB prime CB plus the other terms for some CA CB A prime and B prime, in particular for the optimal one, but for some combination of these. Well, at this point, we can just use strong subadditivity to see that this is greater than or equal to S of A prime BC plus S of A CA plus S of C A CB. Where we use strong subadditivity on these two terms, and we expanded this into the union of CA and CB. Then this can be used again on these two terms to give you this combination. Then one can use Araki-Leib on these two inequalities to say that the sum of these entanglement entropies is greater than the entanglement entropy of the shared piece. So this is S of B, CB plus S of AC plus S of CA. And then one can use subadditivity on the first and last terms to show that this is greater than or equal to S of BC plus S of AC. But what have we really showed? What we've really showed is that that the term that we need to add to the right-hand side of the conditional mutual information in order to make it greater than the left-hand side of the conditional mutual information is precisely this conditional entanglement of purification. So this inequality ends up matching with that inequality. And so this is a situation that you usually don't see in analyses of holographic entanglement entropy, where you can show something, you can find something that's motivated by holographic entanglement entropy, and then it leads to an inequality. And furthermore, you can show that that inequality is actually true for all quantum states. Now, the thing that's maybe even more interesting is that the same functions, F1 of the conditional entanglement of purification is still an upper bound in the same way of the tripartite information. And that F2 is still an upper bound for the cyclic combinations. The reason why this might be surprising is because for normal quantum states, these lower bounds are not true. Right? For traditional quantum states, the tripartite information doesn't necessarily have definite sign, and the condition and the cyclic combinations also don't have definite sign. But nevertheless, you can prove that the same inequalities that upper bound the EW things also upper bound for all quantum states these combinations. So even though these combinations don't have a definite lower bound that is equal to zero, they're not necessarily positive, they still respect these non-trivial upper bounds. So now, you just say a few more words about another conjecture, about a way to possibly extend this conjecture. So you might notice that in the entanglement wedge cross section picture, it was important that the EW be in the minimum surface that separates these two regions. So there's an infimum here where you take the choice over all possible choices. And an EP is also defined with some infimum of some stuff, right? So you might think that these infima match with each other because you get a constrained optimization on both sides where you take this sort of minimum object, both for conditional EP and EW and also for unconditional EP and EW. Now, a natural question when you have infimums on both sides is what happens if you take the infima away? Right. So what happens if I consider, I don't need to draw this again. What happens if I consider this object, but instead of taking this line that separates A from B, I take some line like this that separates A from B. Right? What does the area of this minimal surface calculate? Well, a conjecture that my collaborator and I motivated that's related to this is that this non-minimal partitioning of A and B actually corresponds to some non-minimal entanglement of purification. So instead of having some infimum over S of AA prime, it's just this object we're saying is just related to the entanglement entropy of some S of AA prime, where this is not necessarily the minimal one. And in particular, the way that it might work is that if this is the A region and this is the B region, in the bit thread picture of holographic entanglement, previously what you would have is that all bit threads coming from A that are computing S of A need to go through to B in this way. And so this thing kind this waste kind of calculates the amount of flow that you get from A to B. But if you have this other flow, then the thing that this flow exactly misses are going to be bit threads that start from A and then deviate outwards like that. Or if you're calculating S of B, let me draw another one on this side, maybe some flow that goes like that and then goes down, right? So what we may be able to define is that the points that correspond to this A in this way, these are subsets of your B prime for some generalized entanglement of purification. And then this corresponds to your A prime. And so the number of bit thread lines that are counted here will then therefore calculate something like S of A prime or S of B prime for these non-minimal purifications. And so the conjecture is about whether or not non-minimal partitionings of the entanglement wedge correspond to non-minimal entanglements of purification where you remove the infimum from the definition. Should I stop now? Okay. So there are a few future directions that one can do. One can take some of the other inequalities and see if they extend. So in particular, remember that there are inequalities of this form also. We generalized that inequality up there, but one can consider generalizing this inequality also. Maybe this also holds true for some sort of conditionalization of the left-hand side or the right-hand side. One may be able to define some sort of entanglement waste or entanglement of purification object that really is manifestly a permutation invariant between A, B, and C, instead of this conditional thing, which is permutation invariant between A and B, but not with C. And then moreover, we may be able to test this conjecture using toy models of holography, such as tensor networks, and we can analyze whether or not this has anything to do with the Markov property recently talked about by Cassini and his collaborators. Thank you very much for your attention.